If one accepts the sannyas order, his main business is to devote his life completely to the service of Mukunda, Krishna. If one does not completely devote his mind and body to the service of the Lord, he does not actually become a sannyasi. It is not simply a matter of changing dress. So sannyasi is not the cloth, it's not the title. Sannyasi is the consciousness, and every devotee can do it. Of course, the cloth and the title may be helpful or not helpful, depending how we use them in the service of the Lord. They provide an opportunity, of course, but we can use it in different ways. It is not simply a matter of changing dress. In Bhagavad Gita 6.1, which we read the first day, it is also stated, anashrita karma palam karyam karma karoti yaha sa sanyasi cha yogi cha. One who works devotedly for the satisfaction of Krishna is a sannyasi. The dress is not sannyas, but the attitude of service to Krishna is. The word paratmanishta means being a devotee of Lord Krishna, paratma, the Supreme Person. Paratma, the Supreme Person, is Krishna. Ishvara Paramakrishna, Satchitananda Vigraha. Those who are completely dedicated to the lotus feet of Krishna in service are actually sannyasis. So we were discussing the previous days that therefore these principles apply not only to formal sannyasis but to any devotee who is surrendering his or her life to Krishna. And when we discuss the ten factors which promote success or failure, we can also apply it generally in devotional service, because this is what is sannyas, is devotional service. As a matter of formality, the devotee accepts the sannyas dress, as previous acharyas did. He also accepts the three dandas. Later, Vishnu Swami, when we discuss the history, we discuss about Vishnu Swami. Vishnu Swami considered that accepting the dress of a tridandi was paratmanishta. Therefore, sincere devotees add another danda, the jiva danda, to the three existing dandas. The Vaishnava sannyasi is known as a tridandi sannyasi. The Mayavadi sannyasi accepts only one danda, not understanding the meaning of tridanda. Later, many persons in the community of Shiva Swami gave up the atmanishta, devotional service of the Lord, and followed the path of Shankaracharya. Instead of accepting 108 names, those in the Shiva Swami Sampradaya follow the path of Shankaracharya and accept the 10 names of sannyas. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the then existing order of sannyas, namely Ekadanda, he still recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam about the Tridanda sannyas accepted by the Brahmana of Avantipur. Indirectly, he declared that within that Ekadanda, one danda, four dandas existed as one. Accepting Ekadanda sannyas without paratmanishta, devotional service to Lord Krishna, is not acceptable to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In addition, according to the exact regulative principles, one should add the Jiva Danda to the Tri Danda. These four dandas, bound together as one, are symbolic of unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. Because the Ekadandi Sannyasis of the Mayavada school are not devoted to the service of Krishna, they try to merge into the Brahman effulgence, which is a marginal position between material and spiritual existence. They accept this impersonal position as liberation. Mayavadi sannyasis, not knowing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a Tridandi, think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an Ekadandi sannyasi. This is due to their vivarta, bewilderment. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no such thing as an Ekadandi sannyasi. Indeed, the Tridandi sannyasi is accepted as the symbolic representation of the sannyas order. By citing this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the sannyas order recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mayavadi sannyasis who are enamored of the external energy of the Lord cannot understand the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To date, all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in his footsteps, accept the sannyas order and keep the sacred thread and tuft of unshaved hair. The Ekadandi sannyasis of the Mayavadi school give up the sacred thread and do not keep any tuft of hair. Therefore, they are unable to understand the purpose of Tridanda Sannyas. And as such, they are not inclined to dedicate their lives to the service of Mukunda. They simply think of merging into the existence of Brahman because of their disgust with material existence. The acharyas who advocate the Daiva Varna Ashrama, the social order of Chaturvarnian, mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, do not accept the proposition of Asura Varna Ashrama, which maintains that the social order of Varna is indicated by birth. The most intimate devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, namely Gadadhar Pandit, accepted Tridanda Sannyas and also accepted Madhava Upadhyaya as his Tridandi Sannyasi disciple. It is said that from this Madhavacharya, the Sampradaya known in Western India as the Balabhacharya Sampradaya has begun. Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who is known as Smriti Acharya in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, later accepted the Tridanda Sannyas order from Tridandipat Prabodhananda Sarasvati. Although acceptance of Tridanda Sannyas is not distinctly mentioned in the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, the first verse of Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita advocates that one should accept the Tridanda Sannyas order by controlling the six forces, Vacho Vegam, Manasa, Krodha Vegam, etc. One who can control the forces of speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue, and genitals is known as a Goswami and is competent to accept disciples all over the world. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never accepted the Mayavada order of sannyas, and for this they cannot be blamed. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Sri Dara Swami, who was a Trinandi sannyasi. But the Mayavadi sannyasis, not understanding Sridhara Swami, sometimes think that Sridhara Swami belonged to the Mayavada Ekaranda sannyas community. Actually, this was not the case. So this morning during the topical class, we were discussing about the renunciation and its relation to devotional life. And we did discuss a little bit about the evolution of sannyasa in ISKCON without entering in too many details. Due to the limitation of time, we will not go in depth into that. Those of you who are interested will have the opportunity to read the dissertation when it is published. I think we will do our best to do it as soon as possible in 2012. If someone is very, very eager that cannot wait, then I can give an electronic copy on the condition that it's not distributed. But I'm afraid if I do so, it may be distributed and the book selling will drop. So, anyway, we'll see. If you don't want to wait, let me know, and then we'll see what can be done. So, we were discussing this morning about Srila Prabhupada's calculated risk on awarding sannyas to young disciples. And one of the ex-sannyasis explained that, how Srila Prabhupada was aware that many devotees may not be able to make it. And Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj told me once that in the sannyas initiation of Panchadravida Swami, after that there was a discussion about sannyas. And Srila Prabhupada said that my god brothers accused me for giving sannyas to young men. They blame me. And actually, they are right. So Prabhupada knew he was risking for the mission, the spreading of the mission of Krishna consciousness. And this picture, you recognize some of the faces there? Sivaram Swami is the second, yes. Who is the first? Indadyumna Swami. Any? I'm not sure, but I believe the last one looks like Prabhavishnu Swami, isn't he? And the third one is the next sannyasi, who is actually living in Holland. I will not get into the names of this. Born in Italy. It's he, no? The third one, no? It's not he? Yeah? I think so. So this looks like their sannyas initiation. I found this picture on doing Google images on sannyasis, and this picture was there. You find ISKCON sannyasis, Gaudiya Math sannyasis also, some other groups. You find Rakhnish sannyasis, and so anyway, you see their faces, they are young, they are, aren't they? I don't know how old they were. They were quite young at the time. So there was a calculated risk. And actually, I didn't check. I didn't have the time to go know into the names and what year they take sannyas. But there was a moratorium in early 1980, short after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. The GBC was concerned that there were too many devotees applying for sannyas. At one point, there was a very big list, 20-plus applicants. And the GBC saw that many of them, they wanted to take sannyas, what they suspected us or they perceived as immature motivations. So they decided to put a moratorium, which was a 2-year moratorium, to decide, okay, let's watch this. But then what happened? Immediately after the moratorium, there was a massive initiation of sannyasis. If I remember well, was 24 sannyasis initiated at once. 2 years, no sannyasis, then many sannyasis. So that was the calculated risk. That's why I wrote the GBC calculated risk. Even they saw many had fallen down, they were in the dilemma. We need sannyasis to preach, to spread the mission. And they decided Srila Prabhupada took the risk, let us also take the risk. Whether you consider it right or wrong, this is part of the history. This happened. Some devotees will say, no, that was right, because whatever they did was accomplished. Others will say, no, that was terrible, because the social implications, the spiritual implications for those who were disciples of those sannyasis was very bad. So you may have either opinion or a mixture of the two, or whatever other opinion. This is a picture, I think this was taken, I'm not sure if it is Srila Prabhupada's centennial, or sometime later, when there was a gathering of Srila Prabhupada's disciples in Mayapur for a World Purima festival. There are not only sannyasis, all of them are Srila Prabhupada's disciples, but as you see, many of them, sannyasis. You recognized many of them. Okay, let's look at the 10 factors which emerged from the research. This is the input given by the devotees who were interviewed and by other devotees who were observing their opinions. Number one, immature motivations for becoming a sannyasi. Maybe you like to read maybe one each, we can read them aloud, and then we will go through and read some of the quotes given by the interviewees. Anyone else? So these are the 10 factors. Of course, they could have been classified in other ways, but this is what they perceived from their... What they did, I collected the quotes after the transcriptions were there, then decided what were the main factors emerging, made a list of them, and then cut it and paste from the interviews what was suitable for each factor, and then selected some of them in writing the paper. They are not watertight, they are interrelated. So you could relate one to the other. Things do not happen in a vacuum. Different values which are similar develop simultaneously. So this is something to keep in mind in our life. One thing brings to the other, and the other brings to the one. So it's like that. Okay, let's now go through them, and we can take some comments and questions on each point. We will not go too long into each factor, otherwise we will not have time to cover them all. Immature motivations. Srila Prabhupada expressed discomfort with disciples who desired to take sannyas but who were unqualified. And this happened especially in the mid-70s when he saw many were failing, and then still they were coming and putting pressure on him to make them sannyasis. And Srila Prabhupada, when they were asking the opportunity, he will not say no. He asked the GBC to help him on that. Because they were asking opportunity. He was grateful to them. They were coming forward. How he could say no? This seemed to be the mood. Jaimini, an ex-sanyasi who had a close relationship with Prabhupada, remembers. In 1976, Prabhupada discussed with Tamal Krishna about these brahmacharis and householders pushing to take sannyas. He was reluctant to say, "No, you are not fit." If they pushed hard enough, he would say, "All right, do it." So he didn't want to confront it, but he had the GBC in 1975 make a system where a person had to wait for 1 year to prove himself fit. And during the year, he would have to do some preaching work to make himself recognized. And they will watch him throughout the year. Now we will say 1 year is nothing. 1 year you can fake it, isn't it? It's very short amount of time. Then in 1976, that was formalized even more. They made it so nobody could apply for sannyas except through their local GBC men. That was to stop them coming directly to Srila Prabhupada, so he didn't have to personally tell them yes or no. If they were recommended by a local leader, then Prabhupada would accept that recommendation and go ahead with it. Srila Prabhupada he also made some exceptions, like, for example, Bhakti Charu Maharaj or Golgobinda Maharaj. He didn't go through this procedure. He decided he wanted to give them sannyas, and he did it. So after all, he was the acharya, and the GBC was serving, they were their servants. And actually in these two cases, they remained as sannyasis. Prabhupada was aware that many approaching him to receive sannyas were immaturely motivated. Then this is another quote by Gautama, another ex-sannyasi, when I asked him, "What made you decide to become a sannyasi?" He replied, this is an excerpt of what he replied, "For prestige, status, pride, there was no need. But Tamal has it. Others got. I want it. I cannot speak for everyone, but I think it is still a prevailing reason within ISKCON. Sannyas within ISKCON is a little different from sannyas in other ashramas. Sannyas in ISKCON brings with it a certain amount of honor and prestige, which I feel is really faithful to developing a real sannyas mood." Vasistha, another ex-sannyasi, observes that in ISKCON, a sannyasi is someone who gets a lot of respect, facility, even money, tickets to go abroad, Mahaprasad. Shouldn't be. Anyway, I don't want to make too many jokes about that. The Maharaj shouldn't be the king of the Mahaprasad. No, I will say what this is, a sannyasi, Santosh Swami. He spoke about proper attitude and behavior for a sannyasi. If anyone wants to become a sannyasi, he should try to understand that I'm taken to this ashrama so that I can serve people more, not so that I can become the worshipable deity of everyone. A sannyasi is supposed to be austere, but no sannyasi is getting the best prasadam. It is the opposite. Yes, a sannyasi should be austere, eat less than others. A leader should be awake while the citizens are sleeping. What are they awake for? To see what need is there for him to provide for the citizens. This means a leader should have the same mentality like a mother attitude towards her baby. A leader is leading from inside out. If you want to become a sannyasi, you should have this principle in mind. Yes, I'm taking this ashrama so that I can be a good example for others. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, I request every member of this Gaudiya Math to donate 2 gallons of blood every day to serve humanity. If you are ready for that, then go for sannyas. If you are not ready to donate the blood as a sacrifice to humanity, then you are not fit to be a sannyasi. And even if you take sannyas, it is just the dress. So these are like the two sides spoken by ex-sannyasis, sannyasis. Comments or questions on that one? Santosh Swami, whoever he may be. The interviews were anonymous. Yeah. No, Swami is Swami. Swami is his Swami. At least now, he's a Swami. When I did the interview, he was a Swami, an ISKCON Swami. He's still in ISKCON. And the ex-Swamis, I gave names of sages. Gautama, Jaimini, Kapila, like that, different. I mentioned ex-sannyasi or sannyasi. How much is in liters? 2 gallons. This is a British measurement, so. Nine liters. How much blood a human being has in the body? How much? Five gallons. You have to produce more blood than you have inside. So he's not speaking about just physical blood, but it means give completely yourself. That's the idea. It means giving completely one's life to the service of the mission. That's the concept. That's the principle.
Thank you.
I'm not fully understanding. You mean, you said they were getting more opportunities to preach. You say if this is a good motivation or bad motivation? Or this is the culture. Sannyasis will get more opportunity. Just even if it's the same person, like Srila Prabhupada in some occasions said, Brahmachari life and Sannyas life in many ways is not so different. In many ways, Sashram life it's not so different. But as a Sannyasi, they will give you the mic before than as a Brahmachari. So that's a fact. I have practical experience of that, of going to places. As a brahmachari, I was preaching substantially also, but in places where I will go and they will not give me the opportunity because of the situation, as a sannyasi, they give me more opportunity. Whether that's best or not best, but that's the fact, that's what happens. And of course, for someone who wants to preach, it's good, it's a good opportunity. You can speak about Krishna. When you speak about Krishna, you have to prepare what you are going to say. And then you have to study more. So it has some positive implications. Of course, if you also one have to measure the capacity to communicate. It's good to listen also. Srila Prabhupada explains in one of his purports referring to sannyasis, listening. If one is not very advanced, one should listen. And if one is advanced, it's good to listen because otherwise he may think he has become more advanced than he is. And then he will fall down because of not listening. He will think he's special and he knows better than the others. And that's not the Vaishnava attitude. Vaishnava attitude is to learn, to listen to the realizations of other Vaishnavas. Let's look at the next one, ordination while young. This is a major one. There is one ex-sannyasi who specifically requested to be named. So I'm naming him. Guru Kripa. He was Guru Kripa Swami, no Guru Kripa Prabhu. When I told him the interviews are anonymous, he told me, anonymous, no. He has, you know, his strong character, he has nose like boxing, very strong. He said, no. You put my name there. Whatever I say, I want people to hear it. I said, okay, I'll do. So I'm quoting him. Guru Kripa, who was also ordained sannyasa at 23, reflects, there is no way at 23 years old someone is ready for sannyas. Shastra scripture says, you shouldn't even take sannyas until you are at least 65. I don't know, I didn't ask him that quote, but okay. He's saying, if you go through the four ashrams, I understand. So you will vanaprastha at 50 until you become a sannyasi, it takes some years. So okay, at 65. Guru Kripa also compares the mind frame of someone mature in age to that of a young man. If a 60-year-old man takes sannyas and walks away from it, that's a shame. That's what Prabhupada called eating your own vomit. But I didn't have any vomit because I never was in the material world. There was nothing to vomit. I didn't know anything about women or family. So I thought it was a profound statement, actually. He was reflecting of his experience. And he told many other details. He was very kind, very open, very from the heart speaking. He's like a strong man, but also you could see he had a big heart when he was speaking. Jaimini openly shares that he was not completely sure he will be able to maintain his vows. Regarding the previously mentioned two-year moratorium on ordaining sannyasis, he recalls, "I was a bit relieved that they did that, because that will give me another year, and that will give a chance to see if I could actually make it." Things develop differently, however, Jaimini continues. "Anyway, what happened was that there was a temple president's meeting after the GBC meetings. The moratorium was announced. There was some men in my son, temple president's, who expected that I was going to take sannyas and were disappointed when they heard that I wasn't. So they pushed the GBC to make an exception and to ask me to go ahead and do it." So there was also peer pressure. The temple presidents wanted their peer to become a sannyasi. They wanted a sannyasi in their son. He will preach. He will make devotees. So I thought, maybe that's Krishna's arrangement. Maybe he thinks that I am capable of doing it. Then I accepted that and I took sannyas. A short time after that, I started to realize that this is much more harder than what I thought it was. I found there were two different experiences of ex-sannyasis. Some of them said they found it difficult after 1 or 2 years. They very soon saw, after the idea of, okay, I achieved what I wanted, I have the position now, people are offering me respect and so on, but actually it's not such a big thing. And others who experience it later on, after 7-8 years, in the what it is called the midlife crisis, this is another factor. They took young, they maintained it, they said they were not cheating, they weren't following the rules. But then at some point, things happened in their lives, there were challenges, and then they had to reassess their commitment. They decided to reassess and they chose to give up. Paila Rishi comments that Prabhupada persuaded him to take sannyas. As previously mentioned, Prabhupada took the risk of encouraging young men to sacrifice their lives to propagate Krishna's message. Some members, like Guru Kripa, think that whatever contribution was made was useful. In that sense, Prabhupada's plan was profitable. Guru Kripa says, "Prabhupada did this because sannyas is a material designation. It's not your eternal designation. For preaching, he made many of us take this, and we took it and got something done. And even if they lasted only a year, they did something. And then they left sannyas." Jaimini contributes another perspective. "I think it's inevitable that giving sannyas to young men proved to be largely a failure, at least from the viewpoint of their being able to maintain the ashram." He's not criticizing Prabhupada, but he's talking from the external, because actually he's very dear to Prabhupada, very close, but he expressed it like that. "And therefore the prestige of the whole ashram was going down. In summary, both objectively and subjectively, ordinating sannyasis when they are young seems a proven factor that contributed to the development of the issue at stake of what we're discussing. Comments or questions on this point? It seems to be clear. It's a very clear one. Number three, difficult personal relationships. Several ex-sannyasis mentioned that there were politics and tensions among ISKCON leaders. These were the early years. There was competition, not a healthy one, but sometimes trying to be better than the other. Criticism among God brothers. So this actually made it difficult. Again, Guru Kripa comments. Actually, he said, for him, he mentioned being young, but this about difficult personal relationships, he expressed in a very candid way. Even though he mentioned also about sexual, because he's a person very strong with a very psychophysical nature, very strong. Even he mentioned that, but he said, you know, in a very, very sincere way, but actually, this was not everything. Like, saying that personal relationships were the real thing. He said, in this regard, he commented, because of the fighting in the institution, we could not reveal our minds. They keep it a secret, and because they keep it a secret, it builds up, and you don't have any trust in your God brothers. You cannot go tell anybody. This whole pressure makes one say, I got to get out of here. That was 1978 December, after I was fighting with these God brothers about the whole thing. These guys were trying to be gurus. There were different opinions. It was enough. I was tired. I couldn't do anything with these people. That's it. I gave up. So the personal relationships was a major point. Another one, Kapila, he had an experience, similar experience, in very different circumstances. He said, I would have continued, but because in my continent, the temples being very neophyte, there were so many politics. And politics weren't just someone speaking about another. There was a physical, violent political atmosphere. This is the only place in the world that Prabhupada had to intervene because of violent activities. For 8 years as a GBC, I tolerated the whole thing. And the straw that broke the camel's back was I was going to a particular country, and one of the leaders there sent me a telegram saying they didn't want me to come anymore. And I said, what do I need this for? Okay, then. Vigyana Swami, he's a sannyasi, he referred to a recent example of a sannyasi who while undergoing personal difficulty, he approached his God brothers for help. They put it on the web, and now he doesn't go to his God brothers. So in time, he just falls away, and he's gone. That's a direct result of our social fabric. Because according to the modern policy, if you hear anything, you have to put it out on the internet. You have to let someone else know because it's the truth. Truth is what connects you to Krishna and takes you back to Godhead. Truth isn't facts. Facts are that matter. People are not that matter. Then Yamaswami, some sannyasis consider that a sannyasi should renounce any sense of proprietorship over his very life. Niyamaswami states, a sannyasi is socially dead. There is no obligation outside the instruction that one should dedicate his life to the service of others. I learned this from Radhanath Swami. And then my personal reflection on that. I don't say I don't agree, but I'm just sharing my literalization. But is this absolutely unconditional? Is there a scope for a healthy personal space? As a relatively new sannyasi, I personally need a balance between the two principles. In other words, to be able to give unconditionally to others, I need time for personal reflection, self-study, and rest. Is this proper for one avowed to give his life in service to God and others? Does it vary according to the level of spiritual advancement each candidate has? Santosh Swami makes a relevant, inspiring comment. As a sannyasi, I very much appreciate the fact that sannyasi is supposed to be a father of everyone. You don't have self-interest. I appreciate the beauty of a sannyasi being an example for others. In any organization where there are so many failures, it is a bad signal for everyone. People want to see success. A sannyasi is supposed to be carrier of love. I feel very happy that I can be able to sacrifice my personal interest for others, which is the main reason why I wanted to take two sannyas life. Not that you cannot be fatherly in another ashram, but in sannyas life, you have more opportunity to do that. Once he thinks differently and sees everyone as one, you don't have a situation where you are restricted to thinking in terms of my family, my people, and my race. A sannyasi has to be fearless and fully depend on Krishna with confidence. This is related to the relationships, because those who express continuity, they talk about good relationships with others. In this case, this sannyasi was talking, being a father, being able, Radhanath Maharaj, quoted by another sannyasi, being able to give the life for the service of others. So they are experiencing joy in serving others, in having good relationships with others. And the ex-sannyasis, they talk about fighting, and for them it affected their service as sannyasis. Comments or questions on this point? Next. I guess you want to hear to all of them, that's why. Okay, let's. I mean, some were preaching. Some of the ex-sannyasis, they were preaching. They had good relationships. That doesn't apply to every sannyasi. Some had good relations, and then for them it came in the midlife crisis. We will see now some of them. So there were different factors according to the person. Each person is different. And one factor may apply to one, but not to the other because of their personal nature or because that person is strong in that area and not strong in the other. that could be also the case. I mean, that could be looking to it. I didn't see that emerging from the interviews, that it was due to the type of service. But could we consider, I don't say it is not, could we explore? But he was preaching to devotees, and he told me, you will reach there, you will have to do the kirtan. In those years also, the sannyasi had to do the kirtan, do the class, then do the next kirtan, the next class, and that was demanding. You don't have to do that. I mean, there are others who also know how to lead kirtan, how to give class. If you need a break, just tell today I want to listen. What's the problem? It's not. You don't have to. Sometimes you go a place 3 days, devotees expect, then you have to comply. But then measure the forces when going to one place or the other. Indeed, I actually have a quote with that. Let me see. About saying no. I think it will come. But because you brought up the point. Let me see if I find it, or maybe I should wait and let it come. Yes, this isn't related to point 9. I think we can't even go there because it came up and then we save time. Excessive self-confidence and a lack of preventative measures. Several long-term sannyasis said that for sannyas to be sustainable, one requires a balanced preventative program that should include prioritizing taking care of one's spiritual life over other duties, learning to say no when the community of devotees expects too much, keeping a substantial amount of time for personal study, spiritual practice, and the inspirational company of other sannyasis, and always keeping the principles of brahmacharya the foundation for sannyas life. Samadhi Swami addresses fellow sannyasis. Be very careful to take care of yourself spiritually. Do not succumb to work, work, work. Preach, preach, preach. You must feed your bhakti lata bij so that it grows and that you can feel yourself in a relationship with Radha and Krishna. Otherwise, you will lament that you have given up your relationship with them, and you will go back to the material world. It is a recurrent phenomenon that devotees prepare an intense program of activities for their visiting sannyasi. Vijay Swami shares his experience. I always said yes. Finally, after this affected his health, he now advises, don't be afraid if they criticize you. If you can do so, you cannot do something because of physical limitations, you should just say no. In addition, he recommends that sannyasis invest time in reading, chanting, and studying so that when they do preach, they have potency, and that they regularly take a retreat. And another one very good on that is Vijnana Swami. It's an interesting concept. The Vedic concept is 8 months they preach, 4 months they sit down in a place and don't even leave the building. There is no obligation. They don't have to give classes, nothing. They just study, contemplate, practice their sadhana, associate with those they want to associate with. We don't give that facility. If that's brought up, then it will be said, it will be said to be Maya. Oh, you are not preaching. You are not doing any service. Comments or questions on this point? It was Sangha, yeah. So the weather was convenient. Was yes, that's applicable. That's again, it's for formal sannyasis we're discussing, but it's applicable to any Vaishnava. If we have two gifts, we need to also charge. It's like the computer battery. When we want to go without being plugged, we need at some point we need to recharge the battery. We charge and then let it consume the battery, then we charge again. But if we don't do that, it comes a point we cannot anymore function. We have to stop. We cannot do our service. Number four, which is five because we said number nine also, loneliness and insufficient spiritual support. 10 minutes only. I don't know if we will cover them all, but okay. They say in one course of pastoral care, Haridas Prabhu gave here, he's an expert in pastoral care, pastoral counseling. And he said, one thing they say is, alone at the top. So sometimes that experience is there for spiritual leaders who have a high position. They feel lonely, they have no one to share. This came up before. Samo Swami comments, if you choose good associates, friends who are good men, and you have a deep relationship, then you get a lot of support. If you don't have any friends, only people who tell you how great you are, then you might have problems. Of course, everyone is different. Some people may need a lot of personal interaction to keep them going, and some people may not need that much. We identify that as the main need when sannyasis have problems. They need friends. He was helping. As sannyasi had problems, he was helping him very much. And that experience was there, having friends. Kapila, an ex-sannyasi, comments, 1 or 2 years prior to leaving, there is a distancing. You are alone. And when you are alone, you get into weird things. So a flag goes up, and we have to be vigilant ourselves to see that flag. Krishna gives some indication. And he makes some recommendation. He says, the Swaminarayan people, they don't let their sannyasis be alone. They always have 2 or 3 people around them. The big guys, they have 8 people in their entourage with them. So as a society, we have to protect our sannyasis. It's like an asset. Just like a company may have a big executive, he's an asset. You don't want him to go to some other company or leave the firm. So you have to make the conditions so he can do his job properly. This is not so much particular advice for a sannyasi, but for the movement in general, how they deal and how they help sannyasis. For example, you know the rule for sannyasis is not to have an intimate discussion with a woman. So if you are in a room, and sometimes happen, the lady, even Vaishnavi, is there, and then you don't leave the room if the sannyasi is talking. Leave the room and close the door. You don't do that. That's it. But some devotees do. They think, okay, he's transcendental. He can deal with it, or even don't think about it. But the system is stay until he finishes. Sometimes after class, for example. So a Vaishnavi wants to ask a question. Everyone starts leaving. Wait one until he leaves. That's what Kapila is mentioning here. Comments or questions on this one? Maya is the other firm. Yes, that's right. Maya is offering different products. Good salary. Okay, let us see. What do we do? We have only 5 minutes for the Arctic. How do we go about that? I'm asking you because... Not really. I didn't make because these were qualitative interviews. So qualitative interviews is more you look at what they express. And I interviewed, it was only 7 ex-sannyasis, 12 sannyasis, plus 2 ministers of sannyas, 6 groups. So it was difficult to say. For qualitative, we'll have to be quantitative interview to chart. And I didn't find it so rich for this particular topic. I thought to talk to the people and to see how they experience what they went through was the most rich. So what do we do? We take some questions and the others will leave it, and if you are interested, you can read it. This will be readable. We do like that. Is that okay? Comments or questions? Why they are anonymous? So they could speak. This is common professional practice in social research. Interviews are anonymous so they can speak. In one case, he asked to be named. I said, okay, then I will honor what you are asking for. But normally, you give them the freedom. Especially with ex-sannyasis, this can be also delicate. And even sannyasis, they may want to say something, although they speak openly, but they want to say something a bit stronger, and if they don't have to be directly named, they feel more free to speak. They could have some personal experience which was very delicate and they wanted to share, so they could share freely. Okay, you want to ask? You want to know about classical temptation, sex, wealth, and fame? Oh, midlife crisis. Understood. Well, you say, I mean, midlife crisis is very much debated by non-devotee scholars. Some agree that there is a midlife crisis. Others speak about midlife passage, they call it. They don't say it's a crisis, it's something you go through. So it's your experience through your life. Others say this is not real, this may happen to some people, may not happen. But I took the concept that some devotees, I can read it, then you get the idea. Let me see. There is one scholar who was a sannyasi monist, Dashanami, Agyananda Bharati. He writes about that, how when he took sannyas, his guru told him that he will have to experience a test between 45 and 60 years old. Even if now as a 10-year brahmachari, he didn't experience difficulty in dealing with the senses. So, and then this made me reflect for ISKCON, also based on my own experience, personal experience, and also looking into the history of the Gaudiya Math. For example, Ananta Vasudev, who was one of the leaders of the Gaudiya Math, he was a brahmachari for his whole life. He gave up sannyas after 60. So this is something. And we had even senior sannyasis in ISKCON having an impeccable record and getting into difficulties even after 60. And quite a number in their 50s, 40s and 50s. So I thought this was an important one to be looked at, a relevant one. And if we don't train our sannyasis to be ready for what's coming, when this is coming, they think what's happening. They don't go through it. If there is a period of where like the senses is the final revolt, they push, it's the last opportunity you have for enjoyment, do it now or never. If they don't have the patience to go through, and they think, oh, I thought I was Paramahamsa, they were telling me, they were bowing before me, so I'm not Paramahamsa, I don't want to cheat, I give up. In some cases, even that can be the case. This is one of the experiences. Vishwamitra, he said, he became a sannyasi when he was 23. He was seriously dedicated to a life of renunciation for more than 15 years. When he turned 40, he went through a profound process of self-analysis which ended giving up his sannyas vows. He said, Vishwamitra came to realize that his missionary ideal of creating a spiritual revolution in the world was not going to happen. He said, we were going to take the world for Prabhupada. But then he saw, this is not happening. I'm 40 now. In addition, there were unpleasant tensions among some ISKCON leaders. When reconsidering his future, Vishwamitra saw that if he were going to continue his life as a sannyasi, he would either have to be like a bishop in ISKCON, like GBC or like that, or to live like a classical Indian sadhu. He identified with neither option, nor did he see the need for further monastic sacrifice. Vedanta Swami, a sannyasi for nearly 30 years, who is almost 70, comments, I think there is a lot of truth in that a person who is 28 may think he can maintain his vows for life, but the test is going to come when he is 50 or 60. I think that people, he didn't share his personal experience, but the fact that he's speaking like that, he must have had some experience. I think that people harbor these seeds, and they are still alive, and they haven't made these desires important. So it sometimes happens that when a man is 50 or 60, he gives up his vows. This happened also to priests. So we say this for Vaishnavas is not the case, but we see that it actually happens. To end, it's time for Sri Sri Radha Gopinath's Arti, but I will finish there, and then we will have time for singing. I will finish saying a few things more. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai. To end further areas of research, in case any of you is interested in getting into it, modern views and practices of renunciation within other Vaishnava lines, such as the Madhvas, Ramanujas and Nimbarkas, could be helpful to learn them and to see what they do, what could be applied within ISKCON. This could be useful for us as ISKCON devotees. They say the Madhvas, they never fall down. I don't believe it, they never fall down. I don't believe it. The record is very good record. They say they have 3-4 fall downs since the time of Madhvacharya. This is what they say. There was a fall down in the times, the Sonalacharya, they saw some fall down, and there was a fall down then. So that's why I don't believe it, that they never fall down. There was a fall. They said the planets, we give so many explanations. But this idea that the infallible sannyasi, this is, even the Swaminarayan, I asked them, they are so strict. They came here to visit Radha Deshande College. I asked them about if they had sadhus who were giving up, and they told me yes. And they're super strict. They don't let them fall down. They are surrounded by others. They're never alone. But sometimes the desires are inside. So, but it's true. I mean, I don't want to undermine that they have an excellent track record. And we can learn from them what they do to prevent. They train them since childhood, and they have so many, they look at their chart. The evolution of the practice and meaning of sannyas within the Gaudiya Math could be a good one, how it has developed since Srila Bhaktisiddhanta until now in the different branches, what they do, what they see, their record in terms of succeeding or failure. Also continuing studying sannyas in ISKCON for the next 20 years and see how it evolves. There has been an improvement with the restrictions established by the GBC body in ordaining new sannyasis in terms of age and screening the candidates, etc. What is? Normally 40 onwards. But usually I took when I was 46, and I am one of the youngers who have taken in recent times. So usually they are 50, 50 plus, 60, so normally. And then sannyas as charismatic authority or traditional authority, and also modern renunciation, the virtual world, and the use of technology. Sannyasis in Facebook. Is that helpful or a problem for sannyas life? I don't know. That's new. So it needs to be considered. And some sannyasis send very powerful messages. I don't use it much. I have many friends. Sometimes I send propaganda. I should use it to advertise the college, actually, to put there a link to the college. And I need help with someone who is expert in the virtual world to help me do it very easily. Maybe you can help me. You want to help me? Help me on that. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much for participating. Hare Krishna.